Hey, welcome everybody. We're back with WizWit Radio. This is 4:20 Monday in April with 10 days to a draft. Big draft for Chip Kelly again with the Eagles. We've had a big preseason, or I'm sorry, a big free agency period, rapid fire every day, even today with Tim Tebow officially being signed. You know, every day you go by, the more things that happen, the more questions you end up having with Chip Kelly's view. Now, we're really starting to see a true vision of newly appointed Eagles czar, Chip Kelly, and what he really wants to do and what kind of players he likes. And I'm really excited for this fresh Eagles season. This is a completely new team. I feel like the Andy Reid era of players is basically gone. Yeah, back once again. This is your host, Michael Irano, and also co-host Justin Emery. And we foresee a very exciting Eagles season. You know, you don't know how many games they're going to win and how far they're going to go, but you can be damn sure that the Eagles are going to be excited on and off the field. But you really look at this draft coming up, and they have a lot of areas where they could really need to improve to go to an elite level, to be a team like New England was last year and Seattle has been the last few years. The NFC is really deep. And in the first three rounds, they're going to have to get guys who are going to contribute this year if they plan to go any further than they have the last couple of years. Yeah, exactly. And that's really, it's funny. You need to go quarterback, maybe safety, offensive lineman, and really you don't even know where your quarterback is. You know, I mean, if Sam Bradford plays 16 games, I mean, I see bright things for this team, but you don't know how many games he's going to play. He's never played 16 games. Now, he was the rookie of the year with Pat Shurmur. I mean, that was a couple of years ago. Right. So, I mean, there's been a litany of first-round picks, quarterbacks who haven't done well, and it seems like Chip now has three of them on his roster. Five first round picks? Well, you know, Mark Sanchez, first round pick. Tebow, first round pick. Bradford, number one overall pick. Bradford and Tebow are both Heisman winners. And then I thought Barkley won a Heisman. He got a lot of votes the 1 year when they won the national championship. No. But for this draft, this and it's more than just, you know, what they do in the first round. We're going to get a little taste coming next Thursday, and we'll be live actually doing the show. But going forward, the first three picks are going to be crucial because they definitely need a deep threat wide receiver, and it's deep there, so I don't foresee a first-round pick unless one of the guy like Jalen Strong ends up there. But going forward, you're going to need offensive line depth. I mean, with the Todd Harriman's leaving, it leaves a hole at right guard, and you only have some young players who have really have no experience. But I think right now we're coming on with
Hey, I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Maybe seems like you're having some problems. We'll get him back on shortly. But it's a really good time of year. You know, I'm glad that the NFL move the draft up, and I'm excited to see what they do. And I mean, really a big question on our defense. They address corner somewhat, and you have four or five corners, but the real big question is who is going to be that other safety? Who is going to be the guy who steps up next to Malcolm Jenkins? And okay.
Yeah, I can hear you a little bit, but not really that well.
Ellie, are you with us?
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, folks. We're having a little tough time. We'll try to get him back in a couple minutes. I'm just going to move forward for right now. I mean, we have a million possibilities, and even late today, I was looking, and there's a potential trade for Mariota. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you hear a new thing every day, so you can't be sure of anything you really hear until draft day, because you don't know. I mean, at this point, who knows? Jameis Winston could go second, and Marcus Mariota could go first, and then any trade would be moot, because I don't think Chip is going to move up to take him. But I don't see – I mean, you've seen him make a lot of moves, but I think he's made smart moves. He's been economic. The way he has run this football team. Anybody who's going to make too much is not going to be here. He's not going to stay here. I mean, McCoy was a great player. He led the Eagles franchise in rushing yards, but an $11 million cap number for a running back. I mean, now you get two guys who probably are more fit to your system, who actually over the last 2 years, if you look at shotgun running yards per carry, the leaders are DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews. So he got guys that fit what he wants to do, and that's what he's been doing. So you go and get a big corner. You still have a great front seven. You lose Trent Cole. I think that's a big loss. We'll see really Brandon Graham's chance to shine, and even Vinny Curry could get some snaps out there. I mean, they're really stacked in the D-line and even an inside linebacker, but you don't know what Kiko Alonso was going to be, but I don't think that was necessarily moved. You can't look at it like he got traded Kiko Alonso for, you know, LeSean McCoy. You got to look at it like that money freed up. He looks like he got Maxwell and Alonso to shore up the defense and then was able to use money to get DeMarco Murray and still have money to make the trade for Sam Bradford. And who knows? I mean, right now to talk about Sam Bradford, I mean, until I see him on the field, until I see what he can do, I can't really fault, you know, what he's doing, or I can't really say he's going to be good or not. I mean, he might not even be here 2 weeks from now. You don't even know. So with what you've seen so far, I mean, it's hard not to be excited as an Eagles fan, but I think we're a little skeptical because, I don't even have a jersey in my closet right now. That I can wear. I got to buy all new jerseys. I don't know who to buy. He's going to get traded next week. And recently, even today, actually, they released Sam Bradford and Tebow jerseys. So that might give you some kind of confidence, you know, that those guys are going to be here for at least this year. And I just don't know what we're going to see come September. And that's what we're going to have to judge Chip by. I know Eagles fans, especially with the Flyers done, the Sixers done, the Phillies in the toilet, we're starved right now for some football knowledge. And you know, that's why Whisper Radio is coming back this time of year. And that's why you're going to see us. You know, you can go to our website. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And you're going to see us going forward covering a lot of the real topics that you're going to hear. You know, not so much jargon. I really just want to talk about, you know, the depth that this team really needs to build. They have quality players everywhere. He didn't want to pay Macklin. Okay. You know, that's probably the biggest loss. And if you ask Chip Kelly, he's probably the guy that he didn't want to get rid of the most. But for $13.5 million, you're not going to be able to sign him. You're not going to be able to keep going. And keep getting all the players you want. You know, if it's Fletcher Cox is going to have a deal soon. Michael Kendricks needs a deal soon. You know, I mean, you have a lot of young players who are going to get paid who perform well. But, I mean, you know, what this year is going to come down to, how good this team is going to be, is is can you get some draft players to contribute? And I'm not saying they got to be stars, but contribute. And then past that, how many players can make that year one to year two jump? You always hear that's a big thing, but now you're going to see guys like Josh Huff, Jordan Matthews, you know, even Corin Pratt, who I think is going to be a guy who's going to make the roster this year because he's tall and he can run. And you're going to see, I mean, really Josh Huff, I think he could be the deep threat that the Eagles are craving, but they need more than one. Last year, teams were able to blitz the run and stay over the top. You know, there was really no deep throws with Mark Sanchez. And now I want to see Sam Bradford's arm and how his leg and his mechanics are coming, you know, at this stage in his career. I mean, even an article came out that he was thinking about retiring. So I would like to see his commitment level and see how he's going to come into camp and gain these guys' trust. Yeah, he talked them back into coming. And you didn't even play. It happened in the preseason. You know what I mean? But this is going to be, for Sam Bradford, the best chance any quarterback could have. I mean, he doesn't have the best receivers. If Macklin was still here, then I mean, any quarterback you put in is going to do decent. But this is going to be the best chance with the best offense he's had in his career, and that's from offensive line standpoint, even a receiving standpoint. Because if you look at the talent other teams have had, I mean, and as far as receiver talent, I mean, I know we don't have Marshawn Lynch, but we look at the Seattle wide receivers over the last couple of years that they've done it with. And it's not stars. It's right. So guys like Josh Huff step up. And you could really see, I mean, with this tight ends that we have, I mean, I don't see this offense dipping off. He's throwing to wide open receivers, and he wants to lead the league in rushing, which he will. And I think, as much as you love LeSean McCoy, and I did, and I think he's a great player, and I wish him the best of luck, and I'm glad he's in the AFC, to be honest, if he's going to go anywhere. But he doesn't really fit what Chip Kelly wants to do. He wants to, 4 yards in a heap of dust is better than a 2 yard loss. And LeSean McCoy was too big play oriented. It was almost like for LeSean McCoy, you could have a great offensive line. It's almost like overkill. You don't need it. You need them to sit back there and run and to throw deep and you keep the safeties back and you just let them cut up people. So now we have a more ground and pound team, a more physical running game. And that's going to show in the fourth quarter. Right. And one thing was interesting, the last Chip Kelly press conference when he was talking about the running backs and everything that was happening, he said that now that we have two guys, he said every time Darren Sproles was in the game, he was kind of holding his breath because they only carried three running backs. And Polk was more on special teams, and he was kind of banged up early in the year, and they didn't really have anybody behind him. So he didn't really want to use Sproles in a lot of different ways. He said he was, he would get scared every time he gets hit because if he goes out, they don't really have a back running back. So now this year when they carry four running backs, I would foresee, you're going to see Sproles split out in receiver in different spots on the field, and you're going to see a lot more versatility from this offense this year. I mean, and I just feel that from the very beginning, Chip Kelly, what he wanted to do was build a team that can, if the team's going to stack the box, he wants to go deep. If they're going to go deep, he wants to run the ball. I mean, the foundation is running, but he wants basically, to use the word, a mebid team. So on offense, he wants the two tight end set with two wide receivers and the tight end goes out, or a three wide receiver set where the receivers are blocking. So basically, he's just exploiting any mismatch that the defense wants to do. If they're going to come in with the nickel, he's going to run. If they come in with the base, he's going to throw. And he's proven that with, 63 pass attempts for Nick Foles last year when you want to lead the league in rushing. I mean, that just shows that you're not going to let versus Arizona. Was that Sanchez?
Yeah.
It was Mark Sanchez. Well, they basically played the same level last year. They should have ran the ball. But, I mean, that's what you should see, though. If you look at what Arizona on tape last year, though, against every team, they had 6 and 7 guys on the line of scrimmage almost all game long versus everybody. That was their plan. They were going to blitz you, and they had, Cromartie and Peterson just playing press and fly coverage. So, I mean, they lived and died by that. But going back, I think that what you're going to see now from this offense is they're going to be able to do anything they want. They're going to be able to go, and especially if Bradford stays healthy, because he does have the arm. He does have the skills. He has the anticipation. That's what made him a number one overall pick. The problem is he hasn't been able to be on the field. So if you can't get him on the field, I mean, it's a moot point. It's a bad pick, and you lost a quarterback, and you lost 2 picks. But, I mean, if it worked out for you, that's great. We're going to have to see coming this year. I mean, he's not going to come in right now to OTAs. He's not coming in until training camp. I would seem to be having problems with them folks at our phone line. Yeah, we'll be able to get him back on very soon. Yeah, so they have a lot of questions, coming in this year. Their receiving core is depleted, and Ryan Tannehill has looked shaky in his first couple of years. He showed streaks of greatness, but he hasn't really paid up to that number 8 overall pick. And it goes to show, this is what I think Tennessee is going to look at. They're going to go in the last 10 years, and they're going to say, who was the second quarterback taken? Who was these guys? And that's going to be whether they pick Mariota or not. So you're going to see. I mean, picking a quarterback that high, I mean, if it works out, it's great. Look at Andrew Luck, number one overall pick. I mean, he's made the playoffs every year. That's crazy. They were 2-14, and they went to the playoffs the next year. I mean, it completely took. But look at, look at the next team. I mean, it really goes to show you how diverse you can really be. Because now Washington trades up to get their quarterback. They think for the future, RG3, what's Washington's going to need, and he has one good year, and after that, he's shown nothing. Right. I mean, but then again, how much of that is him pushing himself through injury and not? And then you hear, but, I would have said the injury if not how the end of last year went, with how the coaching staff and the players around him, and everybody had bad things to say. And, I mean, he even had bad things to say about his fellow players. That's to me, I mean, whether you're doing good or not, you just can't do that. So going forward with RG3, I mean, that's even another team, Washington, at the 5th pick who could take a – I just hear some static. That's okay, folks. We'll still keep you going fresh with Philadelphia sports. Talking about that, we actually play the Dolphins this year, I think. I believe we play that division. Yeah, but, I mean, the AFC division you play is cyclical. Right. And we'll be back. And we'll be back Thursday night with a an Eagles schedule recap, and me and Justin will each give you our picks for the year. It's the first time you're going to see the schedule in order and you see what kind of stretches they had. Last year, they really had a murderer's row at the end of the year with Seattle and Dallas and Washington back-to-back-to-back like that. So coming this year, we'll see what kind of matchups they have and see if they can really make a run. Right now, you see the Dallas Cowboys are the so-called favorite, but until they get a running back, I don't really believe in them. I don't believe in what Dallas is selling. I know that they have a great offensive line, and their defense looked good last year, but, you know, they played above their level, and we'll see another year coming, and we'll see if they either retool and get better, which they could, or do teams figure out what Dallas was doing with their guys, and are their weaknesses shown this year? And Tony Romo had a great year last year, but if they're not running with the 1,800-yard rusher, how many more games do they win? I mean, Dallas won how many games within the last quarter within 5-10 points? And now for us, and especially with a time of possession team like the Eagles, and you saw what McCoy was able to do in the fourth quarter. Just dropped. We'll have to give it a few minutes and see if we can try it again. But, you know, looking at the NFC as a whole, I mean, it's a tough climb. In other years past, I mean, maybe, like, even when Andy Reid first came here and he made his first run, the NFC had about one good team in it. I don't want to say good team, one great team in it, one team to play with, and they usually lost to them in the NFC Championship game. So now, in this era, we have the Green Bay Packers, the Arizona Cardinals, the Dallas Cowboys, the Seattle Seahawks, all in the NFC. So how are you going to compete with those teams? How are you going to compete with Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, Drew Brees? That's who you're going to have to compete with. If you're going to try and outscore people and just outscore people, and then that's why I'll give Chip my checkpoint of approval. I'll give him my stamp because he went defense this year. You know what I mean? He went cornerbacks. He got inside linebacker. He got depth along the team. He got veteran guys who are going to be tough players. And he wants to get better on defense. He says, I can score. Let me play D great. And if this is a great defense, he's going to come out and smother teams. We could run teams off the field. If we get three or four three and outs in a row against the opponent's offense, I mean, you know that the way the Eagles' offense runs, that defense could be tired and done within the first half. And you've seen they run teams off the field. Even a game I cite, the beginning of last year, the Colts game. The Colts were beating us all game long, basically. I mean, we had some flies, but at the end of the game, the Colts were just tired, and our running game was what won us the game from behind at the end. And you don't see a team who can run the ball in the two-minute drill, but the Eagles can. And they'll attack you with 30- and 40-yard runs. And that's what they did. That's what they did to the Colts. And by the end of the game, everybody on the Colts defense was gassed.
Hello? Sorry, it's still a little staticky. I'd like to come on and talk. You know, it seems like you're having a good conversation. I'm just having a little trouble hearing you.
We apologize for this inconvenience, and we're, you know, this is our first show. This is a We're going to work our way through this and get this together for the future. But we're going to keep it going with Equals Talk Live. And you're going to see, I think, this year what Chip Kelly's really made of. No, no pen for you. But we can really see what his vision is and what he wants to do with this football team. You know, what kind of guys he likes. Does he like big, you know? I don't know. It's not fun to play against them. I'll tell you that. They're my team of choice forever. I was stuck with the home team, and you know that's why I love to do this radio show. Talk Eagles like a gift to me every day. Because I do this anyway. Me and Justin would be doing this by ourselves if we weren't here. Yeah. Well, this is the first. I'll give him one pitch. This is the first day of OTAs. Yeah, I mean, they knew there was going to be a buzz. There's always a Tebow buzz, and it's really taken off. And I think the word, the name Tim Tebow has already been said too much, to be honest. This is a guy who, at the very best this year, is the third quarterback on the team. And beating out Matt Barkley or DJ Kinney, I mean, come on. That they're not competition. Neither of them have even thrown a pass, a 80-yard touchdown pass in a game, let alone the playoffs, let alone going 8-6. So if he's gotten even 10%, 15% better of his arm strength talent, I mean, if Chip Kelly's that far down on his list where Sanchez and Bradford get hurt, which is possible, because if Bradford gets hurt early, then Sanchez has to go through a full year. He's shown injury concerns throughout his career, too. So unless Chip Kelly wants to be just done, I mean, with Matt Barkley, that's kind of an experiment at that point. If he's your starting quarterback. Right, but I could see, I mean, not to say that, you know, I want to give it to Tebow, but like I could see Tebow over Matt Barkley or over DJ Kinney. That's where I say, and you see a one-year contract. I mean, this is a guy who's going to work hard. This is a guy who's going to give his all, and it's going to show to every other player on the team. I mean, he's like a cancer, but it's a good cancer. I mean, it only takes one little, you know, the sign he comes out. I mean, they're making pretzels of him. I mean, have you ever seen a signing of a nobody that had that much hype?
Hello? Hello?
Oh, this is just,
Hello?
I wonder if it's playing if we just can't hear him.
Hello?
There he goes.
Hello? Am I on? Hello? Hello?
I don't think. Hey, Matt, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't hear the other guy.
Okay. I mean, it's good to hear from you, and this is a big offseason, I think, for the Miami Dolphins coming this year with a big sign of Ndamukong Suh. You guys have really upgraded a defense that was a top 15 defense last year anyway.
Yeah, they've done a lot of good things this offseason. They've gotten a lot of rid of the old contracts that really Jeff Ireland brought in, and the bloated stuff, you know, Brian Hartline, Danielle Ellerbe, Philip Wheeler,
We signed Ndamukong Suh this offseason, as you just mentioned, so that's going to be obviously a huge boost to the defensive line and the defense in general, because Suh will just make everybody around him way better than they actually are. He'll be able to cover the weaknesses, be able to free up space for the linebackers to roam around, and in turn, when he collapses the pocket and gets pressure on the quarterback, that's going to help make the cornerbacks better as well. So on the defensive side of the ball, the Dolphins made a lot of moves. They still have some holes on the defense, especially at the linebacker position. They need to, you know, figure out what they're going to do with the middle linebacker, outside linebacker. And I know that Michael Kendricks, or is it Michael Kendricks, could be a possibility for the Dolphins next weekend during the draft. There have been rumors about the Eagles wanting to trade him. And, of course, Deion Jordan is also rumored to be traded. And, of course, Chip Kelly would have some interest there as well. So we could see some Dolphins and Eagles movement coming next weekend during the draft.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And but they really had to make some noise, because that whole division, I mean, that might be the best division in football now. With New England winning the Super Bowl and they came down a little bit. But the way Buffalo and the Jets fired away, they look like a cusp team the last few years, the Dolphins. And, it was really hard for them to keep up.
Right. And here's where I'm confused about the AFC East. You know, you got the Jets, who had a dominant defense before with Rex Ryan. So they hire a defensive-minded head coach in Todd Bowles. You know, the jury obviously is still out on Bowles, and we don't know how he's going to turn out. But don't you think the Jets probably should have went to the offensive side of the spectrum with the coaching staff? Because no matter who's in there, that defense is still going to be elite for the next 2 to 3 years with the talent that Rex Ryan had in place. They still have no quarterback. They got Brandon Marshall, but he's on the downside of his career. They have Eric Decker, and we'll really see how good he can be with a true number one receiver on the other side. But then you go back to the quarterback position. You look at Geno Smith. Now Marcus Mariota might fall to the Jets at 6. Who knows? We'll have to see how that shakes out. But still, you're focusing on that quarterback position. Now, as far as the Bills go, again, same thing as the Jets. They had an elite defense under Doug Marrone and Jim Schwartz, who was the defensive coordinator last year. Now you bring in Rex Ryan. How much better is that defense going to get? It's going to get better, but not much better. And then, again, you look at the quarterback position. Sure, you got LeSean McCoy. Sure, you got Sammy Watkins. And now you have Charles Clay as well. But, again, when it comes down to it, who's the person going to be throwing the ball to the rest of the offense?
Right. Where do you see the Dolphins going with the 14th pick in the draft? I mean, they have a lot of needs and a lot of places to improve in a big division to compete in.
It's tough because they can go in so many different directions. Mike Tannenbaum, the new executive director of football operations down there, he said some things about the cornerback position which were interesting, and said that it's one of the most important positions on the field besides the quarterback. So that kind of makes you think that the Dolphins are going to go cornerback at 14, but really there's no one really worth it there, except if you're talking about Marcus Peters, but then you have his off-field concerns. Then you look at the wide receiver position. You got Amari Cooper, Kevin White. You got Devontae Parker. The Dolphins love Devontae Parker. I heard something today that if Parker is on the board at 14, that will be the Dolphins' pick. But then if they're not there, then you look at the offensive line. You can pick someone like Lael Collins if he's still there. If Brandon Scherff falls, he might be the pick there. Dolphins might be able to trade down and get someone like Cameron Irving. They brought in a lot of offensive linemen who are projected to go in the first round and the early second round, and that could be a possibility for them in the first round as well. So really, you know, it's up in the air, but it's probably going to be an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, or a cornerback. I would narrow it down to those three positions.
Right. No, I definitely agree with that. And I think this draft is, what I'm hearing is it's a really deep draft, you know. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's not too much top round talent. There's maybe 15 to 17 guys you can really think about taking in the first round. But rounds 2, 3, and 4 are just loaded with talent and depth, and that's really where, you know, teams are going to do well this season, this coming draft.
Yeah, and I'd like to see what happens with the schedule coming out to tomorrow night. I'm pretty sure that the Eagles actually play the Dolphins this year.
Yep, we do. The Dolphins will play in Philadelphia this year, I believe, right? They'll be hosting the Giants, and they'll be hosting the Giants and the Cowboys down in Miami. They'll be traveling to Washington and traveling to Philadelphia. So that's certainly going to be interesting. And then you guys got Tim Tebow now, who I'm a huge fan of. He he brought the Broncos back several years ago against the Dolphins. A miraculous comeback with less than 2 minutes left. I think the Broncos were down by two possessions. And he brought them back, scored a touchdown onside kick, ran down the field again, and the Broncos won the game at the last second. And, you know, just brings back memories and nightmares. And, you know, I think Chip Kelly is going to find a way to use Tim Tebow if he makes the final roster. Chip Kelly is a genius. And even though people might not agree with the moves he's made this offseason, you know, he doesn't care because he knows what he's doing and he has a plan.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's definitely exciting. You know what I mean? It's tough to broadcast what any team's going to be in September, October, or November. But the Eagles are really a team that could be in a lot of different ways. But before
I let you go,
I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Before I let you go, where do you see the Dolphins finishing this year? Do you think there's a playoff run in them?
You know, it's time for them to make the playoffs. They've been right on the edge the past two seasons. They had a chance 2 years ago, and all they had to do was win one more game against the Jets or the Bills, and they couldn't do it. This past season, they had to win one more game or two more games towards the end of the season, and they couldn't do it. So, you know, they must make the playoffs if Joe Philbin wants to keep his job there at Miami. But I think they were a few pieces away last year. You could see the obvious holes in the defensive line and the linebacker core. You could see the issues with the wide receiver core. So if they fix the linebacker and the wide receiver issue in the draft and get these impact players that they think you're going to get, then the Dolphins should easily make a run at the playoffs and hopefully make some noise once they get there.
Yeah, thank you very much. Once again, we're here with Matthew Cannata from FinManiacs.com.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. You guys have a great night, okay?
Yep. Thanks for being patient with us, and I'm pretty sure we'll have the phone lines under control.
All right. No problem. Take care.
All right. I take it easy. Yeah, definitely. Especially before that Dolphins-Eagles game, you know, I don't even want to talk projections now as far as who's going to win what game. You don't even know where it's going to be, but we'll wait till we get the schedule together, and hopefully it's an early game. Yeah, and to be honest, I'm really excited with this year, and I think that we're really going to see an improvement. You know, it's hard to say how good this team could be when you trade so many players, when you lose 80 catches for 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns two straight years now with DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. They had almost identical years. So they need another speedster who can really put the numbers up. And, I mean, Jordan Matthews is more of a guy over the middle and a quick route runner and stuff. And, I mean, he's Jerry Rice's cousin, so you never know. His year to one, the two jump could be something that's special. But you're going to need guys like Josh Huff to step up. But, I mean, Josh Huff was a good player and in college, and he was very productive, and he runs like a running back. Right. Hey, Justin, are you there with us?
Yeah. What's up, guys?
Hey, doing tonight? It's glad to hear from you on this year. And this is another big offseason for the San Diego Chargers as well, with questions looming. I'll start you off with how you feel about the trade rumors that have been circling around Philip Rivers.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, the Rant Sports Report came out. I'm sure you guys seen that article with the Eagles getting the number two, getting Mariota. I don't know about all that, but it's been touchy down here in San Diego, man. A lot of fans are kind of walking on eggshells. It's been kind of depressing, to be honest, because we're going through a stadium talk, and our team might leave, and you got a Philip Rivers that it's kind of up in limbo. We don't have any idea what's going to play out until draft day. So it's been a little awkward for everybody down here. And, you know, you got a franchise quarterback for that long, who's been so good for us, and it's just puts you in a little bit of turmoil. You know, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, how do you feel with actually talking? You know, especially here with the we're coming out of Philadelphia with the Ryan Matthews moving from San Diego. How do you feel they're going to get that running back production this year?
Well, you just got to hope he stays healthy. Ryan Matthews has always been a lot of people in San Diego hashtag him the China doll. But when he's healthy on the field, he's amazing. He's a good running. He could be one of the best running backs in football. He just has had problems staying healthy. And with you guys adding DeMarco Murray, that's going to give it such a great 1-2 punch. Also, a former Charger, Sproulsy, too, in the backfield. So, yeah, man, you guys are looking tough, but he definitely needs to stay healthy to be productive for you guys, and you just got to kind of cross your fingers with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, say that the Chargers stay put.
What's that, bud? I can barely hear the other guy. I can hear.
Yeah.
That's all right. What was the question?
Sorry about that. If the Chargers were to stay put at 17,
right.
What do you think the fit for them were to be this year?
Well, in my opinion, a lot of people have different things going on. All the mocks are out there. I want a running back personally. You got to fill a void. We do have Donald Brown. We do have Brandon Oliver, and of course Danny Woodhead. They're all role playing backs. We don't have a every down guy. You know, Ryan Matthews was that guy, but like I said, dude, he was so banged up. I think the Chargers brass, the front office, is kind of sick of it, and I really believe they just said, you know what, let him test the free agent market. But yeah, I would love to see a Melvin Gordon type. I would love to see a Todd Gurley here. Now, if they go a different position in round one, defensive tackle would be huge. I think Leonard Williams out of USC would fit a bill for us. We have really lacked a defensive tackle presence since Jamal Williams left 10 years ago. We haven't had a guy that's just plugged, especially in a 3-4 defense. As you guys know, you need that plug in the middle. But I think if they did grab the defensive tackle first round, they could get a good value in a Jay Ajayi, kid out of Boise State, and I would fill that running back role as well.
Right. And speaking of the current state of the San Diego roster, how good do you think they are this year? Do you think they're a contender for a division and a playoff run, maybe even a Super Bowl contender?
They do. They play well at times. But you gotta kind of look a little farther in. It's last year they weren't so good in division. I think they went 2-6 in the division. It wasn't good. I think they got swept by the Broncos and the Chiefs. And they beat the Raiders once, so it was 1-6 to be honest. But it was just bad. And if you can't win in your own division, you're not going to make a real run. And the Chargers kind of laid an egg on that last game. They had a shot to get in the playoffs, and against a backup quarterback and Chase Daniel, the Chiefs beat our butt, and we went home kind of with our tails between our legs. But I mean, they have a great roster. There's some good talent on this team. It's all about keeping 17 upright, and I think they've gone out and made some acquisitions so far. Chris Harrison, offensive tackle, brought him in, and Orlando Franklin, who was Peyton Manning's kind of bodyguard there in Denver. So made some good pickups, you know. But I really think they can make the playoff run. Anytime you have a franchise quarterback, like I was saying, if Rivers sticks around, we got a shot every year. So.
Yeah, you definitely have a chance when you have the elite quarterback. There's been actually some weird rumors coming out of San Diego this year with as regards to a move to L.A.
Yeah, yes. There are any further updates about the possibility that the Chargers might be moving to L.A.?
Yeah, you know, and that's the other part of this whole thing. It's really hard to get into the draft and get focused on that when you don't even know if your team's going to be here. I can't explain the feeling to you guys, but us diehards here are like, you know, it's like your heart getting ripped out. So every day we're looking for news updates. Right now it's more or less the Chargers and the city are trying to get a proposal together, a financial proposal together. That the Chargers like, and if the Chargers are willing to accept that that proposal, things could move forward quite swiftly. But it's hard here in San Diego. The politics of city council members, it's been a rough deal here. And until they start making some hay in the community and getting some backing, it's not looking good right now, guys. It's not looking good for the Chargers to stick around. But they do have some proposals on the table and a site location where the current Qualcomm Stadium is already. They want to build next to that. So it's all about getting an approval and just getting the ball rolling so the Chargers can look the deal over and make an assumption on what they want to do financially.
Yeah, that's really tough to hear. I mean, I would never want my team to move, you know, and that's got to be something tough to go through for a fan, and they've been there for a while. And I love
right.
San Diego, and I've been a fan of them for a while. I wouldn't want to see them to go. But
what
do you
yeah,
think
I know.
The,
we're in agreement, actual, man.
What would you say the percentage would be? I mean, I feel like it's a little quick turnaround, but.
The percentages of them staying is what you're saying?
Yeah, the percentage of them staying, yeah.
You know, right now, like I said, kind of it's up in the air right now. It's 50-50. If the city wows them with a proposal and a financial plan that works, it'll work out. It'll work out here. And they're really kind of gaining momentum. Like today they hired some like a law firm and a financial backing from Citibank. So they got the things in place to get it rolling, and it's come far in the last 5 months, and it's taken 14 years to do it. But once the Chargers started threatening, the city started paying attention a little more. So, yeah, it's just up in the air, man. It's we're in flux here. We're walking on eggshells.
And back to what we were saying about Phillip Rivers. As a fan, you know, you never want, you know, one of the standouts on the team to leave. But if they were to be Phillip Rivers, what would be an acceptable price tag that the fan base would be okay with that?
An acceptable what? I didn't catch the last end of that.
What would you get back?
What would you get back for Phillip Rivers that would make the fans be okay with the fact they got rid of it? Would it be a first-round pick, 2 first-round picks? What, as a fan, do you want to see get back if you move?
Right, the compensation. Yeah, you know, and that's tough. What 33-year-old veteran quarterback, he's been, I think he's a 4- or 5-time Pro Bowler. He's money. He's going to be healthy. He's going to start every game. Me personally, I'd want to see good compensation. If you wanted Phillip Rivers and say they wanted to trade that 2 pick to Tennessee, I'd like us to see keep our 17th pick as well, because I think it's worth that, and really hit a home run, kind of like they did when LT was drafted, and they turned around the first pick of the second round. They got Drew Brees, and they hit a home run, and forever your franchise has changed. So it would have to be something mind-blowing to me. You're giving up a quarterback that gives you a shot to make the playoffs every single season, and he's a winner. He's a winner. He's fiery. People love him. He's a good guy in the community. He's worth more than what I think people are talking about. But, you know, then again, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows if he's even going to be traded? Because if the Chargers want to move to L.A., you know, they're going to have a little bit of star power to go there and have a big name. But Phillip does not want to play there. So it's just a crazy situation. But yes, I think getting back to your initial statement, we'd have to get something with a home run type impact, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really do, and I think the biggest key for San Diego this year is to get that division record a lot better. And I know the same thing happened with the Eagles at the end of last year. Not winning those games is the difference between going to the playoffs and missing out. So,
right.
I don't want to hold up too much more of your time, but who's your favorite this year for the Super Bowl?
For the Super Bowl? A Super Bowl matchup is what you're saying?
Yeah. He's asking you for your Super Bowl projection.
Well, I'd like to say my Bolts would be there, but I don't know if they're as talented as they should be to make a Super Bowl run. You got to look at the Seahawks coming out of the NFC, not to dog your Eagles down there. But, you know, the Seahawks are so strong, and then you acquire Jimmy Graham until somebody kind of knocks him off their pedestal. I'd say out of the NFC, them again. Yeah, and you know, and then you have Tom Brady, who seems like he doesn't age a bit. And, yeah, it could be another rematch. It's hard to do to go back-to-back like that. I know the Bills and Giants did it in their heyday there for a while, and they kind of went back and, you know, back-to-back. But, yeah, I could see those two teams going back to the Super Bowl. And, Seahawks should have won that game anyway. But, yeah, those are two tough teams, man.
Yeah, I actually like to see that game again.
Definitely. Round two would be cool.
Justin, thanks for taking some time to jump on here with us. We really appreciate it, and we hope to have you back again in the future.
Hey, man, thank you guys for having us, and San Diego Sports Junkies will always be a friend of your guys', and we'll contribute any way we can.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll be talking to you shortly.
Hey, no problem, guys.
Once again, that was Justin Mead with SanDiegoSportsJunkies.com, and I will be sitting here rooting for San Diego to stay where they are, because me and Justin have a little, we actually went on a vacation a few years ago, and I'll tell you, at the first chance, I'd probably move there.
I think there's a lot of people who would jump on the opportunity to move to San Diego.
The hardest thing would be to lose the Eagles. That'd be the hardest thing. I would have to fly back from like October to January. That'd be the only choice, because I could not miss my football season. I mean, I go to almost every game, and this year we're going to be throwing a lot of tailgates and stuff for people to come down and hang out with us before we go to the game. We might even have some tickets and prizes for everybody. So there's a lot to look forward to in this coming season, as far as on the field, as far as with radio, as far as the draft in 10 days, and as we come up on it, you know, every day a new piece of the puzzle is unlocked. And I think we're going to see what kind of team this is. You know, they showed toughness. They showed grit. They won late in games. They fought back in a lot of games. But at the end of the stretch, Mark Sanchez just wasn't good enough.
No, and that became to the forefront the most at the Green Bay Packers game. You show what a difference between a good quarterback or a great quarterback and a marginal quarterback can do.
Right. But even versus, you know, Washington and Dallas, we had chances to win the game, and there were two interceptions by Sanchez in the fourth quarter that cost the Eagles the game. And when you're going to play that possession high tempo, you can't turn the ball over. And that's what I want to see this year. I mean, and I hope this is what Chip Kelly's thought process was going into the year. Like, I led the league in turnovers. I can't do that. If we don't lead the league in turnovers, if we had a plus, if they were positive in the turnover area, they probably win 12 games. But they weren't, you know what I mean? And you can't have if, ends, and buts in the NFL. This is not the league for that. But he addressed the turnover situation. Sam Bradford, for whatever you want to say about him, when he's on the field, he does not throw interceptions. He does not turn the ball over. Mark Sanchez, whatever you want to say, there wasn't another quarterback. I mean, there's not any other quarterbacks out there. So even with Tim Tebow, the criticism about him, there's no other quarterbacks out there to take. There's nobody on the street.
And I wanted to ask Elliot earlier in the show what the possibilities are that Tebow plays a different position.
See, he's been reluctant to in the past, but if anybody could, in a sense, get him to, you think it's Chip Kelly, and you think he knows this is actually probably his last chance to make an impact in the NFL. And if he blows a chance here, he's not going to get another one. So we're going to see going forward what Tim Tebow is made of, what this organization is made of. And we still don't know the full extent of what really Howie Roseman's doing and what these guys are going to be like in the draft room together. What's going to go on? There's a lot of storylines coming up soon.
And I believe now Chip is the ultimate on on the final say. It's all about him, right? Chip has full say over the player personnel.
Yeah, but I hope this isn't I hope he's not a guy that needs yes men around. That's all I hope. I don't care if you want to have final say and everything, but you better be listening to these guys around you and trust the guys around you. Because that's the only way you're really going to get better in this league. You know, no one man is going to build, a dynasty. I mean, even you want to say how great Brady or Belichick is by themselves, you can't say one without the other. So, you know, you need your other components. whether that's going to be another coach, whether Chip Kelly's going to find, you know, Bill Davis is his guy who's going to be the architect of the defense and Chip Kelly architect of the offense, or is it going to be a quarterback like Sam Bradford? Is he going to show up and be our Tom Brady? You know, that not comparing him to Tom Brady. I'm saying, is he going to be our franchise? And I mean, he's the number one overall pick. I mean, 3 or 4 years, whatever. Guys have changed teams and changed locations and have come out on top from. You know, sometimes things get stale. Sometimes things aren't right for you. Sometimes the coach says it's not right. The team's not right around you. There's a reason there's only 5 or 10 good quarterbacks in the NFL. There's a reason there's only a few great.
They don't come around that often.
Right, but even Peyton Manning. If Peyton Manning was without an offensive line and skill set weapon, I mean, he'd be a good quarterback, but how many 11, 12 win seasons would he have? You know,
I don't know. That's a bad example.
But no, I'm just saying, even whoever you talk about, whatever quarterback, it's not a one-man sport. It's a team game. So that's why when I look at the Eagles and I say, okay, the offensive line is set. The running backs they have, the receivers, I mean, the tight ends are stacked, so the receivers can be, you don't need to be star-studded at every position, because that's just not realistic. You need to have good players at every position, and I think they do. I think they have depth, and you need to add more depth in the draft. Positions you're really going to need is wide receiver depth. There's probably going to be a guy out of the draft this year who's on the roster as a wide receiver. There's going to be a draft pick on the roster as an outside linebacker.
Yeah, and I heard today that I hate bringing up players' names, and I can't remember what they are, but the wide receiver from Miami, who's supposed to be a straight speed demon, and he's going to run a 4.3, if not quicker, 40 at his pro day coming up. He's going to probably get drafted somewhere in the 20s, if not a little bit later, but he's got some character issues that Chip might not be okay with. If you let Deshaun go, what's going to stop him from bringing in somebody and releasing him as well?
Right, and he definitely doesn't want any diva receiver, and I don't see him taking a chance on a guy who's not going to come into work, because if you're not set in this offense, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to be on the field unless you can do a lot of different things, especially being the fifth or sixth receiver on the roster. That's why I see them going bigger with that the sixth receiver that's going to get drafted. I see a bigger guy because he's going to be a guy who needs to come in and play special teams. He's got to come in and contribute all over the football field. You saw that they kept Trey Burton last year as the fourth tight end, and now they get rid of James Casey to keep him because he's a jack of all trades. He's all over the field. He blocked a few punts. He had a punt return touchdown. He didn't really catch passes, but he was on the top special teams unit in the league, and they just keep adding special teams aces. And, you know, talk about that. There's one safety who I say is a dark horse right now in this race. It's a guy who actually, I tell you, I looked up his measurables earlier, and Chris Margos, who has been a special teams ace for about 4 or 5 years, he's 5'11", 200 pounds. He ran a 4.440 with 36 vert. If that's not a safety, I don't know what it is. So now he's had 3 or 4 years to procure and work hard and show that he's a worker. Now, who knows? He's going to get reps to play at safety, and you never know. You see guys like this. Even Quentin Michael came out like this, where he was a special teams ace. And next thing you know, a Pro Bowl safety with a 10, 11-year career.
Yeah, and I believe he's still down in Carolina.
Tired.
Oh, he's retired? No love lost with that one. But we have our next guest on the line. We have Mike Harar of The District Podcast on WBAD, Washington, D.C. sports. He covers, you know, the Redskins, you know, Nationals, Capitals, you know, all the teams that, you know, Philadelphia fans are supposed to hate because they're so close. But we're going to bring him on because we love good sports conversations with good sports people. And we're going to bring him on right now. Hey, Mike, thanks for taking some time tonight to join us. We really appreciate it. How's it going?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. This has been a big offseason for Washington. You know, you guys have made a lot of moves this year, and you have a big decision to make with your quarterback coming up. How do you feel about the additions to the defense, and where do you think that's going to bring you as far as Golston coming in?
You know, it's they've made some big moves in free agency on the defensive side of the ball, like you said. Getting guys like Jerron Johnson from Seattle, getting the Chris Culver to come in, play corner from the 49ers. And then, like you said, the trade for Deshaun Goldson. I think they feel like they've got their two safeties in place going into next season. Those two are a huge upgrade from what they had last season. And they obviously focused all their attention on the defensive side of the ball. So you have to think that come draft time, they're going to look at shoring up some of the deficiencies on that side of the ball with the offense.
Right.
The offensive line being an issue, obviously, and also looking at backup running back. I think they think there's a need there as well.
Yeah, and speaking about the draft, you know, the Redskins have the number 5 pick. And they have a lot of holes to fill, but if one of the two quarterbacks, Mariota or Winston, are there at 5, does Jay Gruden pull the trigger on it, or does he still roll the dice with what he has right now under center?
Well, the mantra going in this offseason is with Scott McLuhan, the new general manager, who is really, I think, going to be making them, he's going to have the final say on all these decisions. I would be surprised if they went ahead and took a Mariota or, you know, even a Winston if he happened to fall that far. I'd be shocked. I think at that point they'd probably be more looking to trade back, find a partner in maybe a Cleveland or somebody like that. To pick up more picks. This team has so many holes to fill, and based on what McLuhan has said so far in his time with the team, he's flat out said he thought it was too early to give up on a high draft pick like a Robert Griffin III. But at the same time, he said, I didn't draft any of these guys, and they all have to earn their keep. So the funny thing is with this offseason, you're going to see people – speculating, including myself, you know, Hogshaven.com, the site I work with. We've been doing a mock draft every week on the district. We've been speculating this on our podcast, right, on our radio show every week. Nobody knows what this guy's going to do. We haven't seen it yet. So I would be shocked if either of the two quarterbacks are still there. I think they will go 1 and 2. But if they did drop to 5, I think they'd be more inclined to trade out of that pick, pick up more instead of actually picking one of those guys themselves. I don't think that would happen.
Right. So what do you think the bigger hole, the bigger need going into this draft is for your team? Would you say offensive line help? Because that's probably the one thing on that offense that would need help outside the quarterback. Or would you rather see them upgrade the defense as far as maybe cornerbacks or even maybe an outside linebacker with their Arakpo part?
Well, I think the way the talent is kind of lining up in this draft coming up, there's going to be a lot of guys at the outside linebacker position who will probably be available at the 5th pick. In a lot of the mock drafts you look at, you know, you see the Redskins taking a guy like a Dante Fowler if he falls that far, or a Vic Beasley, because they are slotted to – those two are slotted to go around that position. There really isn't an offensive lineman who kind of jumps off the page as someone who you would might want to take that high. The closest I've seen is a guy like a Brandon Scherff from Iowa, but there's some debate with him. Is he an offensive guard? Is he an offensive tackle? So I think if they don't move at all, I would think that they'd probably go with one of the outside linebackers who will probably be there. And I don't think that's a move that would be a bad one to make, mostly because they did lose Brian Arakpo this offseason to the Titans. He's a guy that really underperformed for them the last couple seasons, and he's gone now. So they drafted Trent Murphy with their second round pick last season. And I've been of the opinion where I would like to see what he could do, but I also think you can never hurt to have too many pass rushers. So I'm more inclined to go, if you're going to stake with that 5th pick, I'd be more inclined to take one of those pass rushers, maybe a Fowler if he's there, or Leonard Williams, even defensive tackle. I think he'd be a great place to go. I don't think he would get past him at 5 if he's available. I would go that way and then use the rest of the draft to kind of try to shore up those offensive line slots that they will definitely have, that their offensive line is weak for sure.
But, you know, with Washington actually split with the Eagles last year, and look pretty well, you know, off and on. But do you think they can do it again and repeat that? Do you think they're a lot better this year? Are they a contender for this division?
Oh, it's so hard to say that right now. You can't say the Redskins are a contender right now. They've won 7 games the last 2 seasons. So, no, you can't say that. One of the things I love about the NFL is year to year, there will always be a team that jumps out that you don't expect and performs better than everyone predicted. Will the Redskins be that team? It's so hard to say that. While I do love the moves they've made on the defensive side of the ball, shoring up the secondary, beefing up their defensive line with a guy like Pot Roast, who they brought in, Terrence Knighton, who I just love. I think if they can provide more of a pass rush, that will make a world of difference. But until we see what happens after the draft, it's almost impossible to say that they would be a contender. And as of right now, you'd have to say they won't be because the talent's just not there yet.
Oh, yeah, I do agree with that. Well, I was actually looking at something and reading about RG3 the other day, where he said actually that he didn't want to, he was fine with the team not picking up his option for next year.
Right.
I don't know how you feel about that. I think that's a weird statement to be talking about, I guess, this time of year, I guess.
Yeah, he's gotten killed for that. I think he said he wouldn't be bummed if they didn't pick up his option. I don't know. That doesn't bother me too much. He followed that statement up by saying no matter what, he has to go out and perform next season. But when you're RG3, and he has said some, I think, some foolish things in the past, but everything he says just gets dissected to the nth degree. So he really can't win either way with the media. It's kind of turned into something where no matter what he says, it's just he's going to get killed. I don't have a problem with it. He's right. He, in the sense that he just needs to play. If the team wins and he goes out and is anything close to what he did his rookie season, he'll get his money. Whether or not they pick up that contract or not, he'll get his money. Whether or not he can do that is the big question.
Yeah, okay. I really agree with that. And I just want to say that, over the last few years, especially it's been tough for Washington, but looking around the sport world, Washington has really taken a step up. And not to take too much more of your time, but I think Washington might even be passed now with 3 of the 4 teams in a playoff situation, and now the Redskins are really the last team to try and jump the leap.
Right.
It's a good time to be a Washington fan.
Oh, it's been fun. The Wizards upset the Raptors on Saturday, I want to say. You got the Capitals in a neck-and-neck 2-1 battle with the Islanders. The Nationals are, on paper, they look like they're going to win the World Series this year. It's going to be a long season. So it's a really fun time to be a D.C. fan. That's why we have a lot of fun on our show, The District, every week. There's just so much to talk about. And, of course, the Redskins are the driving force between every level with sports here in this town. But it's a lot of fun when the other 3 major teams are able to do what they've been doing.
Right. And on the last note, right before we let you get out of here, let us get your Super Bowl prediction. What are you thinking is going to be the outcome this year?
Wow. It's hard to say. It's so early, but, I mean, it's hard. How do you not pick the Patriots? They kind of do it every season. So, yeah, I'll go with the Patriots on the AFC. On the NFC side, I like the Seahawks again. They're just very consistent. I don't think they lost a lot of anything they've added. At this present time, you have to go with the Seahawks, I think, and the Patriots. But as I said, one of the things I love about the NFL, every year it's a little bit different. Who knows what will happen. The draft can't get here soon enough, and then, of course, the offseason coming up this summer. I'm one of those guys kind of just watching the clock and hoping it gets here. The sooner the better. It's going to be a good season, and we'll just, especially with the NFC East, no team has ever won it back-to-back years. So we'll see what happens this year. It'll always be fun.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to go wrong with the Seahawks and the Patriots the way they played the last few years.
Right. I'm taking the easy way out on that one, guys.
But, thanks for
joining us here. Thanks for jumping on with us, Mike. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back on in the future.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Mike Harar of the District Podcast. You're going to hear them on Thursday night on WBAD Network, Washington, D.C., Sports Radio.
And,
Washington reporters always entertain me.
Yeah, You know, they were down a long time in the Washington fans with a lot of mediocre teams. You know, not that the Eagles, we have won our one championship in 25 years or not. But right now is a good time to be a Washington fan. You got the Washington Wizards in the playoffs. You know, they won their first game, by the way. We have the Washington Nationals. I mean, there's no reason to talk about it. I won't even mention our team's name. That's how I feel about them right now. They're in the doghouse. They'll be there, like I said, till they win 10 games. I told my buddy that I will not speak their name or talk about them or say anything until a certain team of red decides to win 10 games. And my co-host here came back at me and said, oh, well, we'll see you in about July.
Yeah, I'm actually going to check right now to see how they're doing, see if they have 10 wins yet.
I know they lost 6 in a row. That's all I saw.
Well, they probably don't have 10 then. I'm gonna guess off that.
I don't think they've played 16 games, and neither are they 10-6.
No, they're definitely not.
But going
definitely
back,
not 10-6.
Going back to football year, I mean, you know, like you said, you went 4-2 in this division last year.
Yeah.
So got 2 games against Washington. And what's funny is the first game was just as close as the second. So it's not like, oh, you beat them bad once. Like, at least the Cowboys, you say you beat the bad once, the Cowboys. And then you had a fumble on the opening kickoff. I mean, I was at that game. You get a fumble on the opening kickoff. Mark Sanchez throws a pick at the end of the game. And there's a few other plays. And I think even McCoy fumbled in that game. So there was really a few uncharacteristic things that happened to the Eagles. I mean, you can't really call it the turnovers uncharacteristic. That's what they did all year. But when you look at this team, if the corners are 30% better than last year and the turnovers problem gets fixed, now that's big statements, but how much better is this team? You know, you want to talk about Jeremy Maclin, talk about anything else. That's really, if you look at red zone offense, the turnover battle, and the limiting big plays, you're talking about the New England Patriots and Seattle Seahawks, which both of our guests to the air picked yet again, and it's hard to argue anything against.
No, I mean, you're looking at potentially one of the best players ever to play, not just the best quarterback.
With the best coach maybe ever coached.
And then on the other side, you have the first running quarterback to ever win a title with one of the best defenses in the last 20 years.
And one of the best running backs in the league. A great coach, and they're
young.
And their defense is unstoppable, and they're, like you said, they're young. So, really, it's hard not to pick Seattle to almost get better in the coming years. And it's hard to say the way they play, but Russell Wilson's going to get better, that offense is going to get better. But there's one thing that I'll point out. Seattle last year, and now I'm trying to include the playoffs, they had a bye. So there was, what, 2 games before the Super Bowl and then the Super Bowl? Seattle was 14-0 when they allowed 24 or less points. And they were 0-5 when they allowed more than 24 points. So that's a stat to chew on there, that they are scoring efficient. When their defense doesn't do the job, you know, their offense is not built to score 30 points a game. That's where you'll be.
Yeah, but that's the way that the league is trending, so you need to trend with that. Otherwise, you have to guarantee yourself that you'll be able to give up 24 points or less, and you can't guarantee that on any day. You need to just trend upwards with the league. You can't stay stationary. You can't plateau. You always have to be trending upwards.
It's hard to argue with Seattle's strategy, you know, but that's the I guess that's probably what cost them in that game. And even versus the Packers before the Super Bowl, you know, if Green Bay punches one of their first two, first and, you know what I mean, they had first and goal on the one, or second and goal on the one twice, and ended up with field goals, if they punch one of them in, it's out of reach for Seattle.
I agree. I mean, they still should have handed the ball to Lynch.
Yeah, but that, to me, what I always remember about that Super Bowl, I don't want to spend too much time on this, is Belichick running out, and he almost was going to call a timeout with like a little over a minute left. And then he just told everybody, he yelled at his defense, he's like, we're playing it out. basically. He said he's let it hold him. I was watching the clock running. I'm just watching Belichick. And I don't think he didn't even blink, wince, nothing. Like, he knew it was coming. Everybody on the field, I think, except Russell Wilson, knew it was coming. You know? And even the guys said we worked against that play in practice because they probably throw that play in that close proximity a lot. You know what I mean? Bill Belichick is one of the best game planners there is.
Yeah, I remember them saying that, you know, they specifically studied that tape over and over, and the second they went into motion, he already knew what it was.
Yeah, and
they choreographed that play to use in that situation only. So when the situation came to fruition, they knew exactly where they were going to go.
Right, and going back to Eagles coverage, with the draft coming up, you know, there's certain positions that there's not a lot of depth in. We're talking about the strong safety position, really safety in general. There's really only two or three guys. So really our other safety along Malcolm Jenkins is going to come from somebody on the roster. You heard me talk about Chris Margos earlier. There's another guy on our roster who was a rookie last year and was not able to go to OTAs, not able to be in a lot of team activities early. And I'm talking about Ed Reynolds. And he's a guy who could really come up this year and show that he can be the guy and make that year one, year two jump that we've been talking about all show.
I hate looking like that guy, especially on air, but who are you talking about?
The fifth round pick last year, the safety out of Stanford.
All right, well.
I mean, I'll give you some stats on him. 6'1", 210 pounds, runs a 4.5 with a 33-inch vertical. See, what I did today was, I mean, you talk about Chip, and he says big guys beat up little guys. So when I look at the roster, I want to see how the guys we have on our team mold with NFL norm. You know what I mean? Who can project what a player is going to work hard on or which guy is going to come through? But when I look at this roster along the safeties, along the other side, I see Earl Wolf, you know, 5'11", 210, 4.4 speed with a 39-inch vertical, which is pretty impressive athletic ability. Now, maybe he's a little hindered because he had an injury, but if he's even close to those numbers, he's plenty fast and explosive enough to play safety with the man coverage ability. Or two other guys with Chris Magro and Ed Reynolds, both have the prototypical size and speed to play the position. So I think you're going to see coming through camp. And even with Jalen Watkins is another guy.
Did you put together a whole safety list here?
Oh, this is their entire roster, this paper. And for all the key positions,
You sat here and you hand-wrote the entire roster.
No, because I wanted to go and get their stats. So, like, Jalen Watkins, another guy who might be able to play safety. So now, what do you say? He's 5'11", which is, average height for a safety, 195 pounds, and a 4.41. So he can be that guy who can play man and play zone in the safety spot with a 32-inch vertical. You know, you got some other cornerbacks. This is where you got to look and see. This is why when I look down at the wide receiver, you look down, I don't think Will Murphy's going to be here or Jeff Mail again. Those experiments are over. So you look, Miles Austin's going to be here. Josh Huff's going to be here. You know, with a 35-inch vertical at 5'11", he can compete. And he's a little bigger than you probably think. With his 4.5 speed, and then he even ran one in the 4.41 too as well. So then you got Jordan Matthews with a 4.5. I mean, he's prototypical 6'3", 220. He's a guy who's really going to take a step in this next year. But then, if you remember, got Coron Pratt. Remember him last year? He was a training camp guy. He was held on the practice squad, and he just couldn't get in the depth last year. I mean, with Jeremy Maclin coming back, we had a lot of guys on the roster, and he was another guy who was hampered a little bit early in OTAs and training. But he's a guy who is a 4.4 talent, you know what I mean, 200 pounds with 35-inch vertical. So when you look at these, they have guys who can potentially run and jump and play in the NFL. They have the skills. So now it's up to Chip Kelly. You know what I mean? Now it's up to Chip Kelly to put these pieces together.
Yeah, like I said in the beginning of the show, he's building his chess team up.
Right, and so that's why I'm looking here, and it was funny. Like, I just did it as a little side exercise, but I really wanted to tell you guys about this list because he just keeps stockpiling guys with the same skill set, basically. And he's going to hit on one of them. When you have four or five horses in the race, you know, one's bound to run. So that's what you're looking at now at the other safety spot, and cornerback as well. You know, Thurman is a guy who ran 4.4 in his career. Nolan Carroll is a speedster. They even improved their special teams even more, which I love that. I never thought I'd be a fan of special teams and know special teams names, you know what I mean, guys' names. But on the Eagles, you do. And look, they had, what, 10 touchdowns last year on special teams? I mean, that made up for their turnovers.
Yeah, but you can't bank on special teams turnovers year in and year out. That was like a legendary, like a historic special teams performance last year.
Right, but if you get half that production and cut your turnovers by half, you're going to win 10 games again by default. What I look at when I see Chip Kelly, when I see how the team's playing, you know, it's hard to they say sometimes when a team's learning, it's hard to look at the end result all the time. You got to look at the quarter-to-quarter, game-to-game. And from what I got from watching the games last year is that Chip Kelly was consistently, now not in every situation, but for the most part, his system was winning. You know, there's some turnovers, there's some hiccups in the formula, but their system's winning. They're beating teams mentally and physically on the field all year long. And even in the games they lost, the only game they weren't in was the Green Bay game. They were right there in Dallas. They were right there in Washington. They were right there in San Fran and Arizona. They should have beat all four of those teams. So now, if they can stay away from the turnover, it's a whole new day.
Now, I always come back to saying it, and it's, you know, I think a moot point at this point because he's been gone for over a year, but the turnovers directly increased when DeSean Jackson left to take away the top of the defense. If you can somehow replace that and get deep threat that keeps the safeties 15 or 20 yards down the field, you can throw in open spaces again.
Yeah, and I, you know, that was also, I saw a few things on ESPN that they were consciously playing the Eagles deeper route, in a sense, letting them throw the underthrows and the underthrows over and over again, and just making sure they don't let them get over the top. And the run game with the offensive line and their ability to pass block was not the same as it was the year before. So, really, if you look at them, they weren't as good a team as they were the year before. Now, the defense played a little better, but, I mean, they gave up the most 20-plus yard passing plays in the league. I mean, that's a terrible statistic. I mean, to have as bad as they were in the red zone, as bad as they were with turnovers, as bad as they were with time of possession? No. As bad as they were with turnovers, red zone, and
clock management. There's nothing worse than losing what you're going to say in the middle of a sentence during a live broadcast. It's yeah. Okay, that's happened to me before. That's why I just turn and walk away and let you sit in front of the microphone. So it's okay. I'll pick you up right now and say that you were talking about time of possession. And
I'm saying as far as they were with turnovers, time of possession, and red zone, they were lucky to be. They were damn lucky to be 10-4.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When you play that bad, you don't deserve to win 10 games. But when you play that bad, you also don't win your 11th. That'll get you into the playoffs, and that's what hurts more than anything else, is that you have the same win total as the previous season, except that you won the division in the previous year. Granted, you lost the playoff game. You still hosted a home playoff game. And you, the next season, with the same exact record and had to stay home because you screwed around at the end of the season and tried to get cute, and it all went to hell.
But you know what's a funny point, I think? Probably the worst thing that could have happened to Chip Kelly was to go to the playoffs in the first year. Because we were in rebuild mode after Andy Reid left. We were ready to give Chip Kelly his 3 or 4 years to grow. And he gave us that taste. And us Eagles fans can't handle the taste. It's like we're vampires and it's a craving. So once he gave us that playoff craving, and it went down to the last minute, I mean, there's nothing more dissatisfying than watching the season end on the last second field goal. I mean, I find hard pressed for any true Eagles fan to not have tears coming from his eyes watching them burn the clock. Darren Sproles running 50 yards down the field, and then they just run the ball on us. Like, who would have thought that was going to be the end of the season? You know what I mean? In that way. And then they come the next year and let Dallas and Washington beat you. If the Eagles were 5-11, and those five wins came against, or I'm sorry, if the Eagles were 6-10, we'll say, and those six wins came against the division last year, the team would have been, the fans would have been easier on him than going 10-6 and losing those three seesaw games in a row with Seattle, Dallas, and Washington. To lose three games in a row in the most clutch time of the season is really what I think irks most Eagles fans. And it's coming out other places, coming out with the trades and all this, and we're questioning the Eagles czar with their GM being demoted. And now Chip's running the show. So now you see we're a little angry, and it's coming out in a lot of ways.
Definitely. That's going to wrap up our first broadcast back at the VR studio, Red Sound Studio here in Warrington, wrapping up the first show. I'm Justin, your host. Got Mike with me. Thanks for all of our guests for joining us. Yep. Sorry to Elliot about the technical difficulties. You know, that will not be happening next time we talk to you, Elliot, so don't worry about it. Thanks to Matt, thanks to Justin, and thanks to Mike for jumping on the show with us tonight.
Yeah, we had a great night here, and we'll see you again Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And we'll be doing a little bit of NBA as these playoffs heat up. And it's really starting off as a great postseason, and we're going to see how these teams shape up and try to take a little heat off this Eagles phobia that I'm having.
Eagles phobia. I like that. Everybody, thanks for wrapping it up here. We will talk to everybody on Thursday.